Page 111. The eternal system of the authoritarian state, as terrible as the threat may seem, it is no more real than the eternal harmony of the market economy. If the exchange of equivalents was just a guise for inequality, then the fascist plan is simply robbery. Today's possibilities are no less than the despair. State capitalism, as the most recent phase of history, contains more power to organize the economically retarded territories of the world than did the previous phase, whose decisive representatives exhibit their limited power and initiative. They were moved by the fear of losing their profitable social position. They were willing to do anything which would not, in the long run, forfeit the help of future fascism. The regenerated form of ruling power appears in fascism, and they anticipate the power they would have if victorious. The wealth accumulated over the centuries and the diplomatic experience which goes along with it is used to ensure that the legitimate rulers of Europe themselves control its unification and once again prevent integral statism. The era of the authoritarian state can be broken both by such regressions as well as by attempts to establish actual freedom. These attempts, which by their very nature tolerate no bureaucracies, can come only from the isolated. Everyone is isolated. The sullen yearnings of the atomized masses and the conscious will of the underground resistance point in the same direction. To the extent that there existed among the instigators of previous revolutions of collective resistance a sense of infallibility, the masses were only the followers. A direct line leads from the leftist opponents of Robespierre's Etatisme to the conspiracy of the equals under the Directory. As long as the party is still a group not yet alienated from its anti-authoritarian goals, as long as solidarity is not replaced by obedience, as long as the party does not confuse the dictatorship of the proletariat with the rule of the most clever party tacticians, then its general line will be determined precisely by those deviations of which a ruling clique naturally knows how to quickly rid itself. As long as the avant-garde has the ability to act without periodic purchase, the hope for a classless condition will continue to live on. The two phases in which, according to the prescription of tradition, a classless society is to come to fruition have little to do with the ideology which today serves the perpetuation of integral statism. Since an unlimited amount of consumer goods and luxury items still seems like a dream, the ruling class, which should have faded away in the first phase, is said to be able to reinforce its position. Reassured by poor harvests and a housing shortage, it proclaims that the reign of the secret police will disappear when the land of milk and honey has been reached. Page 112. Engels, on the contrary, is a utopian. He merges the socialization of the means of production and the end of oppression into one. The first act in which the state really appears as the representative of the entire society, the seizure of the means of production in the name of society, is at the same time its last independent act as a state. The intervention of power of the state in social relations will become unnecessary in one area after another and then wither away naturally. Footnote 8. Text. He did not believe that the unlimited increase in material production, the prerequisite of a human society and a classless democracy, would be attainable only when the whole world is full populated with tractors and radios. Praxis has not disproven the theory, but rather interpreted it. The enemies of the state power have fallen asleep, but not on their own accord. With each bit of planning completed, a bit of repression was originally supposed to become unnecessary. Instead, more repression has developed in the administration of the plans. When the increase in production actualizes or destroys socialism, cannot be decided abstractly. Dread in the expectation of an authoritarian epoch does not hinder the resistance. The exercise of administrative functions by a class or a party can be replaced after the abolition of privilege by forms of a classless democracy, which can prevent the elevation of the administrative sector to positions of power. Though the bourgeoisie earlier held the government in check, through its property, the administration in a new society would only be kept from becoming oppressive by the uncompromising independence of its citizenry. Even today, its followers are no less a danger to the authoritarian state than the free worker was to liberalism. The belief that one is acting in the name of something greater than oneself is bankrupt. Not a few Marxists paid homage to it. Without the feeling of being a member of a large party or having an honored leader, world history, or at least infallible theory, in their side, their socialism did not function. The devotion to the marching masses, the enthusiastic submission to collectivity, the whole Philistine dream, which met with Nietzsche's scorn, celebrates a happy resurrection with the authoritarian youth organizations. The revolution, which was a vocation on the same level as science, led to jail or to Siberia. But since the victory, a career beckons, if nowhere else, at least in the party hierarchy. There are not only professors, but also revolutionaries of prominence. The mass media assimilate the revolution by absorbing its leaders into their list of celebrities. The isolated individual who is not appointed or protected by any power cannot expect fame. Even so, he is a power because everyone is isolated. Page 113. Their only weapon is the world. The more it is bandied about by the barbarians within and the cultural sophisticates abroad, the more its power is restored. The impotent utterances in the totalitarian state are more dangerous than the most impressive party proclamation under Wilhelm II. Whenever a new jargon stands between themselves and their paying readers, it does not take the German intellectuals very long to learn to use it. Language has always been more used to them in the struggle for existence than in the expression of truth. Their earnestness is revealed again in the betrayal of language to commerce. It is as if they feared that the German language could drive them further than seems consistent with their tolerated existence and the justified demands of their patrons. The men of the Enlightenment had much less to risk. Their opposition harmonized with the interests of the bourgeoisie, which had a good deal of power even then. Voltaire and the encyclopedists had their protectors. Beyond that harmony, no minister of state would go along with them. Jean Meslier had to hold his tongue throughout his life. The Marquis spent his life in jails. But if the world can be a spark, it has yet to set anything on fire. It is in no sense propaganda and hardly a call to action. It seeks to say what everyone knows and at the same time forbids himself to know. It does not impose itself by the skillful uncovering of state secrets, which only the powerful know. The free-floating politician of the mass party whose blustering rhetoric has faded away today indulges in talk of statistics, the national economy, and inside stories. His manner of speaking has become prosaic and well-informed. He maintains an ostensible contact with the workers and expresses himself in export figures and synthetic materials. He knows better than the fascists and must so kistically intoxicated himself with the facts, which have already passed him by. When one man can no longer invoke violence, knowledge must suffice. Whoever cares for a human arrangement of the world can look to no court of appeal, to no existing or future power. The question of what one should do with power once one has it, the same question which was so meaningful for the bureaucrats of the mass party, loses its meaning in a struggle against them. The question presupposes the continued existence of that which should disappear, the power to dispose of the labor of others. If society in the future really functions through free agreement rather than through direct or indirect force, the result of such an agreement cannot be theoretically anticipated. Proposals for the economy beyond those already at hand under state capitalism would eventually be useful. Page 114. Contemporary reflection in the services of a transformed society should not disregard the fact that in classless democracy, plans cannot be forced on others through power or through routine, but must be arrived at through free agreement. The consciousness would keep no one who accepts the possibility of a changed world from considering how people would live without population policy and penal authority, model factories and repressed minorities. It is, of course, more questionable than the neo-humanist Germans tend to think whether the dismantling of the authoritarian bureaucracy would be accompanied by popular orgies of revenge. If the ousting of the rulers is once again accomplished by terror, then these isolated individuals will passionately insist that it will fulfill their will. Nothing on earth can any longer justify violence except the necessity of putting an end to violence itself. If the opponents are right that after the fall of the fascist machinery of terror, chaos will reign, not only just for a moment, but until a new form of terrorist oppression takes over, then humanity is lost. The assertion that without a new authoritarian bureaucracy, the machines, the knowledge, the technical and administrative methods, the entire system for providing necessities as attained under an authoritarian state would be destroyed is a pretext. Their first concern when they think about freedom is the new penal system, not its abolition. The masses, it says in a pamphlet of educational material, will free political prisoners and jail their oppressors instead. Specialists in oppression will offer their services en masse. Whenever or not that happens, again depends on those who are not specialists. The role of the specialists can be all the less important since the means of production need not be developed much beyond the form existing under integral statism. State capitalism sometimes seems almost like a parody of the classless society. There are indications that for technical reasons its centralization of production will survive. If small units take on more importance in relation to the central administration in modern industrial production and strategy, so that the elite workers have to be more and more pampered by the central leadership, then this is the visible expression of a general economic upheaval. The degradation of individuals to mere centers of reaction, which respond to every stimulus, at the same time prepares their emancipation from the central command. Thus, the perfect weapon that the bureaucracy has at its disposal could not ward off changes forever if it did not have something besides its immediate power. The individual has historically constituted himself in fear. There is a further stage of fear beyond the fear of death, from which point it again dissolves. The completion of centralization in society and state pushes its driving forces to decentralize. Page 115.